Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Example where, you know, he was a solid player for a couple of, you know, handful of years, but when he went to summer league, he looked like the best player on the court, and generally he was, because he was an NBA player, an end of the rotation player, but a player.
Eric, we really appreciate my man. Enjoy your Chick-fil-A.
Jeffrey, I'm going to need you to text me what you like this week. I missed the pick segment with Calkins today.
Okay, I'll send you the card.
I love it. Thanks,
right.
Brother.
That is Eric Hastein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. When we come back, let's get into the list. Let's talk a little bit more about the Grizzlies and more from the world of sports. We'll do all that next during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company on 92.9 FM ESPN. Jason Smith's going to join the program during the next segment, but before we do any of that, let's get into the list. NBA Anonymous Survey. All right, Cobb, we just got today's 25-26 NBA Anonymous GM Survey. Have you had a chance to check it out, or you just want to go through it right now?
No, give me the goods. What you got?
All right, so let's start with, I know this will be hard for you, but who do you think was predicted to win the finals?
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City Thunder, maybe?
80% of the vote.
Wow.
Tied for second were the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Denver Nuggets with 7%. The Rockets and Knicks also received votes. Last year, the Boston Celtics had 83% of the vote, so I guess maybe we can hold on to that.
Oh, I mean, yeah, no doubt. So if I went to bet it right now, is it minus 200 to get OKC? Like, that's crazy.
Oh, I would still think you're getting plus to win the title.
I mean, surely, right? But if 80% of the GMs think they're the team that's going to win the whole thing, right? Like, and there's not even really a clear-cut second-place team. The
All
votes
right.
were split.
All right, so I see NBA futures. I just see odds to make the playoffs. I don't see right now. All right.
Okay, no, you're right. Okay, I got NBA Finals winner,
Oklahoma City.
2-1.
I mean,
so
that's
plus,
that has to be one of the smallest favorites in the, like, since the Golden, like, the peak Warriors.
Well, I mean, because the next team is Cleveland at plus 650. So, I mean, you got a huge gap between the favorite and the next closest team. And in case you're wondering, I got to scroll way down to get to the Grizzlies, Jeffrey. 125-1. So, a dollar bet on the Grizzlies could return you a 125 if they win the finals.
All right. See, I'm trying to see. I want the smallest. It was giving me like the 15-16 Warriors. So, yes, the Thunder are the smallest favorite since the 18-19 Warriors.
Did that team win it?
I believe that is the team that loses to Toronto with Durant getting hurt.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, injuries, you never know. But Oklahoma City, they just feel, and I guess you could have said the same thing about Boston going into last year. I mean, that's what it is. It's always injuries in the NBA. That's always what it is.
It feels like the last, like in particular, in like the last 7 years, the playoffs have been largely decided by injuries.
You know, and the maddening thing is you get a franchise like Memphis that goes just above and beyond to try to prevent injuries, and they still happen. Like, what are you supposed to do? Honestly, it's kind of what OKC has done, which is to stack your roster with so much depth and quality. Like, you know, I mean, 1 through 11 for them is a rotation player for any team in the league, right? And so,
and I guess if you want to say like, okay, let's take a look at them. They had injuries last year, but by the time we got to the finals or to the playoffs, they were pretty much full strength. Like, remember, right. Chet missed a lot of time. I think Dort missed some time. Williams missed some time. Like they did like a good job of once they got to the playoffs, everybody was healthy. And to your point, they had so much depth that like, okay, they can give a guy here, you know, like they can be a little more cautious here with Chet because Hartenstein gave them a viable option during the regular season to like fill in those minutes. But like once it came time in the playoffs, like they were there. So I guess you could say like, hey, what if they're not as so lucky on injuries this year? And then also like, while they felt dominant, they were pushed to 7 games against the Nuggets, and they had a couple of games that could have gone either way. And I mean, the Pacers had a lead in the fourth, or had a lead in the first quarter. And granted, who knows how the game plays out in Game 7? And then Halliburton gets hurt.
Yeah, exactly. And then you know, OKC has SGA who plays 76 games. So
correct.
If your best players available that frequently, you know, I mean, that's what it is. It's a crapshoot. So like, sure, if everybody's at full health, like, yeah, absolutely, Oklahoma City betting favorite, but you just don't know. It's literally injuries are the biggest determining factor in who's going to succeed in the NBA.
Correct. And like to your point about Boston, it's like, well, Boston the year before, it's like, I don't know, I guess I kind of was thinking about it in these terms. Because Oklahoma City's not a unbelievable three-point shooting team in terms of like what we've been seeing, like where the game's trending, it felt a little more reasonable. Like with the Celtics, it just felt like an equation. Like you just had to pray that over the course of a 7-game series that they just would miss, they'd miss threes in 4 of the games.
Well, and that still seems to be their MO because they shot 53 of them in Memphis last night. So
I got to tell you, last night was one of the tougher watches I've had in a while. I meant to bring this up. I presume you were familiar with this game. I had no idea Lawson Loverling was on the roster.
Well, I thought, is he not like a...
I mean, he's obviously like going to be like a one of those, like, he's a training camp guy, but, like, I didn't even know that he was a training camp guy.
Well, he was on their summer league team, so I guess it's not...
Maybe
it
wouldn't
be shocking, right?
I just do not recall that.
They literally need bodies. That's the problem. I mean, with Edie out and Clark out and Jaren on the mend, like
PJ Hall tried to start something last night.
Oh gosh. So okay, I'm a little troubled because I have Grizzlies games set to record. My preferred method of watching Grizzlies games is to record and then fly through the commercials.
You're on the Giannotto. Like y'all let you get caught up.
Yeah, but then I go to my Fubo last night at like 10:15 and it's not on there. So I'm a little kind of freaking out about that. I still got the NBA League Pass, but I don't know why it's not giving me the Grizzlies. Anyway, I got to figure that out, but that's why it's the preseason for all of us, if you know what I mean.
I would also argue this about last night. The most misleading stat was the final totals for rebounding. The Grizzlies actually out-rebounded the Celtics by 4. I got real rebounding concerns with this team.
Well, yeah, I mean, no kidding, though, because all their bigs are out. I mean...
But, like even with them, it's like, man, like, the biggest thing to remember is they look bad because their two best players are not playing. So I'm with everyone on that, but it's like there are some defensive things I'm still a little worried about.
I just think you throw everything out from last night because you don't have your ball handlers who are supposed to initiate this speed style of play. You don't have your bigs who can rebound. You don't have, obviously, your two star players. Meanwhile, the opponent is playing Jaylen Brown, is playing Derek White. And then look, like you want to talk about the box score line. This is more of a concern than it is an excuse for last night's performance. If you were just scouting the box score, you would look at Cedric Coward's final line and be like, okay, he played all right. He got a little bit better.
9 fourth quarter points.
Exactly. That all of his points came in like the last
garbage
5 minutes
shot,
of the
baby.
Game. I mean, like,
they play
what?
On 48.
And honestly, I'm not worried. I'm because he's a guy that's going to be better when he has players in the lineup who can set him up, and he does not have that right now. But like, yeah, it's a rough start for him.
But
man.
Also, like, what was his last basketball game? Like, wasn't it in November?
Yeah, he was out for the year after like 7 or 8 games at Washington State. So yeah, I mean, he's not played much real basketball at all. And it's not like he's a self-creator, like somebody who's just going to get his no matter what. This is a guy who's eventually going to get in the flow of the game, and then you'll see like what he can really do. So I honestly, I'm not all that worried about Cedric Howard. And I think in the long run, maybe it's a good thing for him that, like, okay, we can officially kind of level off those expectations, right? Because the first two games went about as poorly as they possibly could. So, you know, we unlike Vince Williams and GG Jackson, where the hype got out of control because of some performances that were really nice in games that didn't matter, Cedric Howard's now kind of taking the opposite approach. And it's like, all right, I'm going to be bad in these games that don't matter. And then, hey, like, only up. You can only go up from here. Meanwhile, it still feels like GG and Vince are coming down from, you know, the garbage time that they, you know, that they, where they played really well at the end of the 24 season.
Yeah, so his last game was November the 21st against Eastern Washington. Which, isn't that where they came from?
Yeah, it is, actually. It's, yes, he came from Eastern with David Riley.
Yeah.
And then Riley got the Washington State job. And, you know, people forget Cedric Howard was committed to play for Duke, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was going to go to Duke and play this year and would probably have been either their leading scorer or second leading scorer. And when you're doing that for Duke, like, typically that means you're a lottery-level pick. Clearly, John Shire, a guy who recruits the likes of Cooper Flagg and other McDonald's All-Americans, saw something that he liked in this guy. So I'm not at all casting a judgment on Cedric Howard from these first two games, but I mean, you don't have to hide from the fact that they've been ugly. I just think it's a natural byproduct of a guy who hasn't played basketball in almost a year, who doesn't have probably the top three setup men who will work with him on a nightly basis in the rotation.
No, I'm with you. I'm doing the nothing that happens in preseason is going to impact how I feel. I'm with you. All right. So let's get into the shade section of our NBA GM survey. You'll never guess who they picked to win the West.
Oklahoma City.
87% of the vote. They also got 10% for second place votes. It's like, well, where was the other three? Did they just not fill it out? So they got 38% of their on all first place ballots. That doesn't make sense at all. Okay.
Yeah, the NBA's math here is a little weird, but the thing that's concerning to me is that not even a one GM voted that the Grizzlies would finish in the top four. What?
Yes, no one even also, they're not even in the top eight. So it's Oklahoma City, Denver, Houston, Minnesota, Golden State, Clippers, Lakers, Dallas, San Antonio. So I guess 3% left them off of their ballot entirely, which makes absolutely no sense. I mean, like, listen, I'm cool with this. Like, let's get the haters going. Let's get the shade.
I mean, it is what it is. Like, Memphis is at its best with a chip on the shoulder and something to prove. You know, they're not very good when you put them in the captain seat, right? Like, they're best coming from the back row and surprising
everybody. I do not want them.
So.
I don't want them being the hunted.
Correct. And they are most definitely now the hunter again. So that's hopefully some motivation. I think there's motivation in this, man. Like, you've got John Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., and you pull up this NBA GM survey, and you're nowhere to be found among the top nine teams in the West. Meanwhile, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's like, I would hope there's some inspiration to be drawn from this. I don't know if locker or bulletin board material is like a thing in the NBA. Especially in October. But man, I hope these guys are being made aware of this, that literally nothing is being expected of them.
It is hilarious to think at the All-Star break last year, this team was second in the West. Now, it was a monumental collapse. Like, I'm not pushing aside, but like, man, the Edie injury just really clouds a lot of my optimism. I actually think the team's going to be better than they were last year. Like, I like a lot of how they retooled it. But the Edie injury just leaves like such a, it's just such a gut punch, because like, I just don't have a ton of faith that like Jock Landale is gonna like just be a placeholder.
Well, yeah, but you're gonna get Jaren back. Like, I mean, I'm not saying Jaren's like the world's best rebounder, but he'll help. I don't know, man. Like, you just got to survive. Just survive until Edie gets back. I'm more worried about John Morant and a gimpy ankle.
Everyone, I'll say this, because it's the classic, we talked about this, we all have, when John Morant injury, PTSD, I think this was he's taking the preseason off. Like, he's been, everyone says, like, he's moving around. You would not know that there's an issue.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the preseason doesn't matter for him. All right, players, who will win the 25-26 Kia MVP? Do you care to guess? I was actually a little surprised, but then I thought about it. It's the GMs, not players.
Right. Who will win MVP? I mean, Nikola Jokic?
Yep. Jokic at 1, Luka 2, SGA 3, Wembanyama 4, Giannis, Anthony Edwards, and Donovan Mitchell also received votes. I did not realize last year SGA was the voting favorite. Now, he was at 40%, but I didn't realize. I mean, I know he finished second, but he was the leader last year. If you were starting a franchise today and could sign any player in the NBA, who would it be?
Okay, I found you on the page here. Yeah, this one, I mean, obvious.
It has to be Wimby. I mean, the only argument against Wimby, right, is just like, are you a little concerned about the
deep thrombosis or whatever, right? Like, that's, you know, that's a thing. But because of his age, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Which player forces coaches to make the most adjustments? Jokic at 57%. The next closest was Giannis at 17%, Curry at 13%, Luka at 10%, SGA at 3%. This is also what it just tells, like, my eyes just tell me, like, I have no problem that SGA won the MVP. None whatsoever. Like, in the end, I think the game should count, and his team was a lot better, and he had the numbers to show it. But, man, when it came playoff time, I was just like, Jokic is not the same thing. There's just no answer for him.
Yeah.
Which player is most likely to have a breakout season? Amen Thompson from Houston comes in at 1%. 30%, Brandon Miller at Charlotte, Oscar Thompson at 10% as well. I guess some people are saying Wembanyama is still going to have a breakout, and then Franz Wagner.
You know what's scary about this one is that not only did Amen Thompson from the Rockets like win this poll for most likely to have a breakout season, but you also had two other players from Houston receive votes in this, like Alperen Sengun and Reed Shepard. Jabari Smith Jr. also. I mean, you got a lot of really talented players in Houston.
I think they're going to be good, and I also think they'll still continue to be a bad matchup for the Grizzlies. I still might have some shorts out there on the Rockets. No Van Vliet. Like, who's going to be their lead guard? Because I'm convinced part of the problem, they quote-unquote can't shoot, it's not necessarily because they don't have good enough shooters. It's because they don't have like a true offensive orchestrator, and so everybody's just taking tough shots.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot to like actually figure out. But if you're looking at long-term futures and like franchises that could reasonably compete with this OKC dynasty over the long haul.
Oh, I'm more talking about this year. Like, I think there's this idea that Durant fixes everything, and I just don't believe that.
Yeah, well, he won't hurt. He never hurts.
He is a tough shot maker, but it's also like, how many games is he going to play?
What are you going to do without Dylan Brooks? That's the real question, Jeffrey.
You know, I did think when Dylan did his media day thing with the Suns, I thought that was interesting when he was talking about, listen, I had to like figure out like what I am after Memphis.
Yeah. You can take the guy out of Memphis, but you can't take the Memphis out of the guy, you know?
Best point guard in the NBA, SGA at 1, Luka at 2. Curry at 3, Haliburton at 4. No Ja listed on the list, and Luka also appears on 3 different positions.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can call him whatever you want to call him. It's positionless now. I mean, these GMs, like, that's their MO. This is positionless basketball, like the era we're in. So I'm not surprised. Like, what even is a point guard?
I guess the guy that has the ball in his hands the most now. Is that right?
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Best shooting guard in the NBA, Anthony Edwards, number 1 at 70%. Listen, there's no questioning whether or not he's good. Has he been crowned a little bit too soon?
Yeah, I think you can make that case. Like, I would maybe still lean more towards a Donovan Mitchell, who's been clutch for longer over the course of a career than Anthony Edwards, who's still young and still searching for that like ultimate breakthrough in terms of team success.
By the way, no Josh Hart. Also, our other Villanova. I'm blanking.
You want Dante DiVincenzo on this?
No. Our other Villanova, the Nick.
No Brunson.
No Jalen Brunson.
Oh, for best point guard, yeah, that's a snub. That's, I mean, no Jalen Brunson, no Ja Morant. Like, yeah.
Do they think?
Meanwhile, Tyrese Halliburton got 3% of the vote, even though we know he's not going to play this year. Like,
well, I was also thinking about this. Is this GM's also implicitly like digging in on their take of like, you know, he was a second rounder. Like, nobody took him in the first round. Is this like them digging in? Like, he's still just not that good. He's like a stat patter. He just has the ball. Like, he's like basically he's like new Harden.
No, probably.
Best small forward, Luka wins. Tatum at 2, KD at 3, LeBron at 4, Kawhi at 5. What it's interesting about that is, let's see. Tatum's probably not playing at all. Durant's going to be a part-time player. LeBron, who knows? And then Kawhi's a part-time player.
Yeah, it's also interesting. Yeah, as you mentioned, Luka Doncic, the second best point guard, the third best shooting guard, and the best small forward. If only there were actually three of him, I think the Lakers would have better title odds.
Which team had the best made the best offseason moves? They give the Hawks the lead at 153%. Rockets at 2, Nuggets at 3, Magic 4, Boston 5. Which one player will make the biggest impact? 73% said Kevin Durant. Number 2 was Desmond Bain.
Yeah.
And then also with who was the most underrated player acquisition? Desmond Bain showed up on 17% of the votes. That led the way.
Yeah, are we going to look back, Jeffrey, in January and February and be like, wow, look at what the Grizzlies gave up? Is the NBA larger universe going to be saying, wow, Orlando really won that trade?
Well, I think that's two questions. Are we saying us, like watching the team night in, night out, or are we saying the media narrative is going to be that?
I can already guarantee you that the media narrative is, you know, like if Dez is even three quarters of what he was here. Like, yeah.
My thing is, what I think we're going to miss the most about Dez is Dez was just like one of the few guys that gave an S.
Yeah.
But I never loved the Dez lead ball handler. Like, I just take it away. No. I think with Jerome, like, I think we've got our new Tyus. Like, I like KCP in this role. Like, I think that they got better in the aggregate.
Yeah, and then the draft capital and all that. I mean, it's, you know.
Most surprising move was Milwaukee waving and stretching Damian Lillard at 43%. Miles Turner to Milwaukee at 30. Who will win Rookie of the Year? No shock here. 97% of the votes say Cooper Flagg. Anything else that stood out to you?
Well, 50% of the GMs a year ago thought Reed Shepard was going to win Rookie of the Year. So these guys don't bat 1,000, right? Like, that's kind of an embarrassing miss for literally the people who are supposed to be the smartest in all of basketball. Because not only did Reed Shepard not win Rookie of the Year, my man spent as much time in the G League as he did the NBA.
The one last thing I want to talk about before we get to Jason. Which head coach has the best defensive schemes? Dagnall comes in at 37%, number one. Is it schemes or does he have like 11 guys that are switchable?
I mean, I think what it is we all just revert to the narrative of what he did in the playoffs, where he would put Alex Caruso on the opposing bigs and, you know, get the opponent's offense out of sync. Like, I mean, it wasn't rocket science. Like, he went back to that well over and over and over again, you know. But, hey, like, give him credit. It's, like, a fairly odd and, like, innovative way to approach things. So he did that. That's what's on everyone's mind when they're filling out this survey. So it's like, wow, what a genius, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Jason Smith joins us next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason!
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Smith is the coach. The Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN from 11 until 2. Follow him on X at Jason Smith 929. Jason, on your very program today, you had one John Calipari. What was, in your mind, like what stuck with you the most?
I think just about the walk back down memory lane, sort of something I think the city, you know, maybe some still not, but many probably. And this wasn't the first time. He's obviously done several press conferences. Sort of today, Jeffrey, you saw it was sort of the car wash.
Oh, yeah.
He was on 56, came on with us. I'm sorry, went on with Doc. And I give Cal credit. You know, he's working. He's doing what he always does. He's selling the event, just like he used to sell the brand. You know, when you were so proud of it, you know, that brand that he helped build in terms of Memphis basketball. And let's be real. Like, if the elephant in the room is that, you know, they haven't made a Sweet 16 since he's left. And so we've always sort of wanted to talk to him about those days. There was that point a few years ago when he's going in the Hall of Fame. Memphis backs out, decides, hey, it's not going to honor him. And so you had that. And, yeah, you've had him back for, what, tournament and everything else. But you haven't had that chance to go back down memory lane. And so it's fun, I'll be honest, to listen to him talk about his old players and about those days, particularly when we have longed for days like that again. Just because, again, we've consistently held this program up to the, you know, a second weekend every, I don't know, Jeff's the one that's sort of the holder of it. What is it, every 7 years at one point it was? Or, you know, certainly every few that you've got to be in that Sweet 16.
No, I think the stat he used to use was every 4 years.
One every 4 years, one every seven. I couldn't remember what it was. But, I mean, it's the standard we've continued to hold it. You know, making Sweet 16s is something we've continued to hold it to. They have not made one since he left. And that's, listen, that's not just on Penny. You know, Josh had it, Tubby had it, Penny's got it. And Penny last year as a 5 seed, you know, we were all really feeling like, you know, and maybe in a way that we're feeling like with Memphis football, but that things were aligning because you'd gone, what, 10-3 against that tough conference, that non-conference schedule, fourth toughest in the country. We've talked about it over and over. And you'd set yourself up. Yeah, tough matchup. You lose Tyrese Hunter. But in the end, what we're going to see is, what, it's now 1-3 for Penny? Or something like that in the NCAA tournament. So, look, to have Cal back, to answer your question, and talking about, you know, Memphis in those days in – listen, he's not – Cal didn't come here for, you know, for himself in the sense that this is going to do him some huge bit of good here. Could have played anybody in the exhibition season. Cal, having been here, understands what St. Jude means to Memphis and, frankly, to the country and to the world. And so my point is he didn't have to do this. And you look at him doing the car wash today, going through, making all the media appearances. You say, man, the man's out working. This is something that you're hoping that from Memphis, if St. Jude can get 10,000 plus, is going to benefit the program because whether you get a regular season game out of it or not with Arkansas, maybe an in-season tournament, that's going to benefit Memphis. And so to have Cal here in this sense working for Memphis is the point I'm trying to make. You know, in a way, I appreciated it, especially as it relates to trying to do something good here. He talked about the old days, trying to sell tickets, trying to get those feelings back, so they could get it up from 6,000 to hopefully 10,000 plus. He's doing doing a job that he didn't necessarily have to do. It was appreciated. It was fun, and to hear him talk, you know, those old days about backing over Jeff's columns, man, that's always fun too.
I keep hearing you mention 10,000 plus. Is that the benchmark of success? Like, if we get 10K in here for this thing, all right, it was worth it. Like, this thing was a smashing hit. Where is that number coming from? And is that your number for a successful event?
It's not my number. I mean, it's sort of the number we've kicked around. Now, I'm not sure if behind the scenes that's St. Jude's number or not, Kyle, but it's sort of, you know, I think last year, I don't have the number in front of me, but 9,000, between 9 and 10, it feels like, you know, that was North Carolina. If, listen, St. Jude is not in the business of putting on basketball games. They wanted to get in this, obviously, for what it could do for them. And what, and frankly, what it could do for the Memphis basketball program. The talk had been, if you do this and you get them to come, then maybe St. Jude could get involved and find sort of a its feet underneath itself, because, again, it's not in this business, and really do something that, yes, would benefit St. Jude, but also would benefit Memphis. And there was talk of maybe an in-season tournament. And so if you've had two events that don't get to 10,000, and this one, Cobb, was supposed to be the one that, I'll be honest with you, when it was first brought up, we sort of brainstormed at what could work. I was thinking way more than 10,000, because the way you should frame this is it's the reunion you never had, right? With Cal coming back, it's the one that you missed a few years ago, potentially. And no, it's not an 08 reunion necessarily if you don't have all those guys back, D. Rose and come back. But Cal mentioned it with us, 40 of his, you know, he thinks 35 to 40 of his 55 or something guys that was, he said, that's the number he used, played for him, you know, from here, are going to be there. And so that's the way it should be framed. That's, you know, and back to the point, if this wasn't going to sell it, Cobb, there's not going to be a St. Jude. My guess would be there's not going to be any incentive anymore for St. Jude to put this on and to get out of it. In a situation where maybe there was a way, again, to, you know, to find the perfect thing that works for both sides, for Memphis and for St. Jude. St. Jude, I should have said St. Jude first. But my point is, no, it's not my number, Cobb. I just think, you know, they're hoping to get to a level where, you know what? Yeah, we can do this each year. And if you're getting less than 10, you can't look yourself in the mirror and say that it's worth it. So, again, it's not my number. It's been kicked around. But I'm hoping for more than that. I'm hoping after this car wash today, maybe Penny is, you know, gets back out there. And I think here's what I would do. And nobody wants my opinion on this. But if you could get out the list of guys that are coming back, and some assurances, and I think I've said this to you guys, if you could just pay the money, and I know it shouldn't be on St. Jude to do it, but if you could just get Derrick Rose to be here, that place would be packed, and sell it as that. You know, selling Cal is one thing. There's still some people in here, I saw them in the comments section saying, I don't want a thing to do with him. Selling him is one thing. If you're selling a reunion of that team and of his guys, Cal's walking out there with him, dude, surely, yes, 10,000 plus, you would think. So I would start getting the word out. Cal has started to put the number out, at least to where they're at now, where they think. I haven't heard any names other than the guys we've sort of seen around here. And that's, that's no shot at them. But a Sean Taggart and even a Sean Williams, I don't think is gonna necessarily do it. You do the reunion you never had. And, hopefully it's sort of the perfect gumbo, man, to have you an event that, you know, can be something that's helping, again, both St. Jude and the Memphis basketball program going forward.
You know, the other thing it reminded me of listening to him, have to be that hard. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we've created this society where, like, every coach going on a show feels like, you know, it's a booking miracle and whatnot. It's like, he just proves, man, it's like, they don't have to take this approach that they do. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you heard some of it. He talked about not making friends because, you know, you let a snake in your bed, it'll bite you. So, you know, he's talking about some media members, I don't befriend them. I mean, I will say, it's not like, you know, I don't think John knows the job, man.
And there's no question on that.
And once he decides to take the time to do the job, and this part of the job, he does it. This is part that he does extremely well, maybe sometimes better than he does in late game situations coaching his basketball team. Like, point being, you ask John about the old days, you're going to, as Jeffrey, as you well know, you're going to get a 5 to 7, 8 minute answer where you're probably not going to be get a thing in, but it's going to be pretty good radio. And he has that ability. And so I just think from that standpoint, John has a gift, Jeffrey, and certainly as a gift as it relates to Memphians listening to him. Like, but again, that was the case certainly at Kentucky and definitely around that national championship time. I think it started to wear off when you weren't producing and Kentucky felt like it was, operating below expectation, and it was. And he can still do that part of the job and excel at it, and especially here in Memphis, where, let's be real again, we hadn't heard it in a while. And so when you've got a showman like him, you know, you can just let him roll. And that's sort of what we did today.
All right, Jason. So you probably saw the American Coaches poll is out. I'm assuming that you are not allowed to vote for yourself in this poll to be number one. So I'm guessing that one of South Florida's two votes came from
Penny Hardaway. Wait, hold on. Time out. Why are we doing it in basketball but not in football?
I know. I made the same point on my show. Like, it's hilarious that, you know, I think it's field of 68. If I'm not mistaken, John's been talking about it on our show. They're going and hosting, basically. I think it's Goodman and Doster going to host the American Days over the basketball days and talk about this poll where, frankly, you know, it's like, who's number two? Like, who wants to step up? That's how weak a league this is. And you're actually going to rank this stuff when you wouldn't do it in football? I mean, where you've actually allowed your, you know, if you just go ahead and done it, your football did the talking on the field. I mean, your conference has set itself apart in terms of what it's done this year, not just Memphis, but on down the list, especially that top five group that you've got. And so, you know, instead of posturing, oh, this could hurt us, play, you know, everything else, should have just let the football do the talking, or at least treated basketball, which is certainly your lesser of the two conferences. Hey, well, you know what? We didn't rank that. Let's not rank this either, especially in the league where, my gosh, two through whatever it is doesn't you know, probably is not making to the NCAA tournament. But that's the question when we're talking American basketball, as they would have us call it. It is a second team out of this thing going to make the NCAA tournament? That's where, you know, unfortunately, that's where we're at now on this side of things. And here's the difference. In football, it feels like you've got some – Giannotto would say this, Jeffrey, you probably remember – some like-minded right now,
yeah,
schools. Maybe not investing at the level you are. You're pretty much at the top from what we hear. But some that are, you know, sort of seeing the benefit now. Hey, if we win the American, we got a good shot right there with Boise State, especially if they have a down year, to be in the college football playoff. Well, that could do a lot for our brand. But they're shifting away, it feels like. It doesn't feel like there's that same urgency or sort of a break, whatever it is. You're cashing in on that basketball side, especially in this world where you're flipping rosters. You got Memphis over here dominating everybody now. Houston's gone. You've got fewer opportunities to get quality wins in conference. And so it's hard. You know, and it's going to be hard, I think, to dig out of this in basketball. I know Pernetti can say, hey, we're going to have these teams scheduled tougher. Well, in a lot of these cases, it looks like they're going to lose because it doesn't look like any of these schools are spending near the money in NIL or can afford to that a Memphis is doing. And so there are less, it looks like-minded athletic departments when it comes to continuing to funnel big money to basketball.
I just want to know which one of these coaches – voted for South Florida. That. Like, do we think it was Andy Kennedy at UAB?
That's funny. Somebody's looking at Torvik up. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily a shot at Penny or thinking he's going to blow it as much as I think, because John's continuing to point out to me, I'm a KenPom guy, not a Torvik guy, but I think on Torvik, they are ahead of Memphis. And so,
oh yeah, I mean, maybe, they are. I don't think it's a crazy opinion. I just am fascinated by the fact that one coach other than Penny probably voted for South Florida. I just kind of want to know who it was.
Yeah. I mean, Penny does have an all new team. I guess you could make that case, but it also could be just straight hate. It could be Ron Hunter.
Yeah. I'm actually going to take up for my guy, AK. I know I'm obviously his PR arm.
AK respects Penny.
AK loves Penny.
Yeah. I think it could be Ron Hunter stabbing a knife in his. Ron always likes to side up to Penny in the game. That's how he's gotten him a couple times. Now, lately, Penny's figured it out. Man, don't let this dude side up to you, try to be friends with you, because he's been a thorn in your side, making you believe it's probably Ron, man. It's probably Ron that old backstab. And again, this is me, and I'm joking, but backstabbing Ron Hunter probably sunk it in his back, man.
No,
Tulane is third, but I mean, what they've got Brumball back, and I guess he's the preseason, you know, player of the year instead of Doug McDaniel. I mean, it's all, you know, last year they picked UAB. Which I get coming up, you know, because Penny had an all new team. But listen, with Houston gone and now this is, you just give it to Memphis every year if you actually want to, you know, rank these and still do this preseason poll.
So I just got to know why does Wichita State still stink? They don't have to pay for a football roster. They don't even have an FCS football team. I don't know why that program. I mean, maybe it was just Greg Marshall's magic touch. But like, I look at this preseason poll and I'm like, Wichita State. With that history, has no business being number five. They should be in top three every year.
Are the Koch brothers, or is that family investing in the same way that it was? I would ask you because I'm not sure.
I think what you could talk me into is they don't like the idea that like you're just buying a roster. Like when it was paying for the program and it was a little more murky, but like.
And if you're not Greg Marshall, who was doing everything for them and essentially become mayor over there, and you were willing to funnel that, give everything to, because again, he was winning. Now, you know, he's going, he was an intense dude and taking, you know, hitting folks for taking his parking spot, but he was winning and it was flowing. And if it doesn't feel like they're getting that level of player, but they also clearly haven't gotten that level of coach. And I think Jeffrey's probably right. Now that we've gotten more transactional and it's more each year, you know, who knows if those guys are clearly they can't be as invested as they were when they had Greg Marshall. That's got to be part of it.
Jason, we really appreciate it, my man.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, boys. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, we got to go to our friends at the University of North Carolina. This totally convincing statement from Bill Belichick last night: I'm fully committed to UNC football and the program we're building here. And then Bubba Cunningham, director of athletics: Coach Belichick has the full support of the Department of Athletics in the university. Well, that says it all, Cop.
I really believe them. I'm very confident now after reading those statements that everything's on track here. This is what they expected. Everything is going just like they planned at North Carolina.
I could be wrong. I still think they're hammering out a settlement.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'd be shocked at this point if Bill Belichick is the coach of North Carolina come mid-December. So, yeah, the get the details ironed out here and then make a clean break. And then at the end of the day, this will be a footnote, just like Urban Meyer's stop with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, who could ever, ever forget? All right, my man, safe travels to Texas.
Hey, have fun at Stream Song. Hey, send me updates. Send me some picks. I want to know. I want to know when you make that first birdie, because I know that'll be very satisfying.
Might be an F. I can't wait, my man. All right, appreciate you. He is David Cobb of CBS Sports. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. Want to thank Eric Aston, Jason Smith for joining us. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.